Thank you, be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner and workers' compensation fund versus Bell.
May it please the court, Ms. Lynn Liberato will present argument to the petitioner. Petitioners have reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Your Honor, my name is Lynn Liberato, and along with Mary Nichols, I represent the Texas Workers' Compensation Insurance Fund. The issue in this case is whether the Staff Leasing Services Act allows a company to split its workforce into employees that are covered by workers' compensation insurance and lease workers who are not covered. Here, Dell has its office workers covered by compensation insurance, and the workers who perform the hazardous duty of cleaning out refinery storage tanks, they do not have workers' compensation coverage. In essence, what is happening is that some...
It's a little more complicated.
Pardon me? It is a little more complicated than that. But in fact, pared down to its most simple element, what's happening is that the workers here who need coverage most aren't covered, and the workers who need it the least are covered. And what is happening in a broader sense is that some companies, to be sure not all, some are very reputable, but some staff leasing service companies are using their position to avoid their legal obligations and to avoid paying for coverage for employees. Essentially, they're running a scam through the Staff Leasing Services Act.
Assuming that's correct, it seems to me your argument is undercut by Provision E under Section 9142, which contemplates that the client company might have, during the period of the assignment of the assigned workers, some workers, permanent staff, who are on workers' compensation, and to which they add these assigned workers at some point after they've already been working at the store approximately 2 years. So the statute clearly contemplates you'll have a client company that has some workers that it covers by workers' comp and some workers that it does not cover by workers' comp.
That's correct, and that is, you know, that. But what that is referring to in subsection E is how to calculate the premium, how you determine, as it says here, the premium for the workers' compensation policy is based on, and then it sets out certain criteria. So it is certainly possible for both the leasing company and the client company to both have comp. But that's not the situation here.
You're missing this point, though. What E contemplates is the fact that the legislature permits a split workforce, because clearly it says, it contemplates if the company adds the company's former assigned workers to an existing policy. So you have a situation where the client company has an existing policy of workers' compensation, and then later, if it so desires, can add to its own employees, the people who were provided by the leasing agency. So why is that not clear that the legislature contemplated and permitted a split workforce?
Well, I don't think it says that that's a split workforce. I think what it says that is that for a certain period, it may be that either they both have coverage, or one doesn't and the other one does, and then whenever the leasing company gets coverage, then this is how it's applied.
Well,
and this is how the determination is.
Under your theory, if the leasing company does not obtain its own insurance,
right,
automatically its employees are the employees of the client company, and they are covered by workers' comp.
If the client company has workers' comp insurance.
Okay, and under E, it talks about the client company having an existing policy,
right,
and adding former assigned workers to the existing policy.
Right.
So what does that mean?
Well, it just means that that's going to be the method of calculating.
Well, they wouldn't have to be added if they were already added.
Well, but they would also have calculated it using the employees that were already there, that their employees that were already covered, and then adding the employees.
So you're saying that the leased employees are already part of the existing policy, they're just not counted for premium purposes?
And they may not be. Or yes, they should be counted, and that's the issue.
What's the point of that, or adds the company's former assigned workers to the existing policy in E?
Well, I think that would be a situation where the employees had been employed by the leasing company and then became employees for the client company themselves. And then it could contemplate a situation like that where the employees were employed by the leasing company, worked for the leasing appointment company, were hired by them, but then transferred and became employees of the client company. So I think that would be one way of reconciling that.
You say this is a scam, but how would it be any different if the cleaning employees were independent contractors or were employees of
Right. Well, independent contractors, then the right of control test would apply, and so whoever has the right of control would be the one that would have the responsibility to provide the workers' compensation insurance. In here, what we have is the specific statute, that being the Staff Leasing Services Act, which says that the client company and the staff leasing company are co-employers, and so it kind of supersedes that right of control test. And so the issue then here, of course, is just what is the application of the co-employer provision within the Staff Leasing Services Act. So I think the distinction is that there's a whole different body of law that relates to subcontractors, and here it is a use of this particular statute and how this particular statute is going to apply.
But if it's a scam, is it not a very dangerous scam on the part of the leasing agency? Because if the client company is covered by workers' compensation insurance, and in providing these leased workers, the leasing agency chooses not to obtain workers' compensation coverage for those employees, and in fact they are performing the more dangerous functions on the job. What that will mean, of course, is that both the client company and the leasing agency are going to be subject to lawsuit for negligence claims without their common law defenses, and if they are performing dangerous functions and somebody is seriously injured, it could put out of business both the leasing agency and the client company. I don't call that a scam. I call that dangerous.
It's dangerous, but look at what exactly happened in this case. I mean, this case shows that as a practical matter, what really happened. Here, the client company is in bankruptcy, Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The leasing company no longer has a license. It has allowed its license to lapse.
The same thing can apply to any non-subscriber for one, but for another. Doesn't the legal notion of piercing the corporate veil deal with that? If you have a company that hires people who perform dangerous functions and they don't provide adequate insurance or have adequate capitalization to provide for recovery, you can pierce the corporate veil, can you not?
Well, you can, and I think that the second aspect of that is it is very dangerous, particularly for the client company. I don't think it's as dangerous for the staff leasing company because they go in and out of business, and quite frankly, they're set up as shells to participate in this shell gang, the ones that are doing it. I'm not saying all of it, but the ones that are doing it. But taking the focus away from the staff leasing companies and putting it with the client companies, for the client companies, that is a real danger. But the way that the Court of Appeals wrote the opinion is that the Court of Appeals said that the client company is not the one that elects to provide coverage. That's not the one that makes the determination of whether there's coverage. That instead, it is at the sole election of the staff leasing company.
But isn't that what the statute says? That the license holder is who makes the election?
It says that, yes, that is true. It says it makes the election.
Putting that then in the context of an earlier question talking about control, since we're required to look at Chapter 91 in its entirety to put all of this in context and interpreting it, looking at the issue of control, Section 91.032 requires that the contract between the leasing company and the client company put all the responsibility for the employee, control, and all the things associated with an employment relationship with the license holder. Correct?
That's true.
So doesn't it look like we have a situation here where the legislature has set up a scheme here that does put all of the control, including the right to elect insurance, in the license holder?
Well, I think you are correct that they put control in the licensing company. But when it comes to the control that matters, I mean, sure, they have control over the administrative aspects of payroll and that sort of thing. But when it comes to the control that matters, and that is control of the workplace, that control, which seems to me to be the important control that's exercised,
well, but
that's being done by the client.
Well, in reality, that may be being done. Mm-hmm. The statute requires, though, that the license holder have those responsibilities. There are five different items listed in 91.032 which appear to give and require that the contract give the license holder the right to control all of these things, including the right of direction and control over the adoption of employment and safety policies.
Well, that's true. That is true. But then you have to read that in context, too, with the co-employer language. I mean, what else does co-employer mean in 91.042? It says the licensing company and the staff leasing company are co-employers.
Well, what about D? I mean,
there's no restriction on it.
Isn't that the situation that we have? The license holder does not elect to obtain workers' compensation insurance. And you say that under that circumstance, then its employees automatically are covered by the client's insurance. Well, then how do you square that with 4.0? The statute says under D in those circumstances that 406.004 and 00033 apply. And 033 specifically says under those circumstances that the plaintiff has to prove negligence and scope of employment, which is inconsistent with workers' comp coverage.
True, except that the issue that you raise is what is it meant by election? Now, our position is that election doesn't necessarily mean what the Court of Appeals says. According to the Court of Appeals, election means you have your own policy, that the staff leasing company has its own policy. But there's more than one way to elect, and that language can be consistent with our theory, which would be that a leasing company elects coverage by contracting with an employer that has coverage. And so if it wants to or chooses to not elect to have coverage, then it would only do work for a client company that doesn't have comp coverage.
If the client does not have comp coverage, the leasing company still could have.
That's correct. That's correct.
And that wouldn't affect either the client's employees or the leasing company's employees.
It means that the leasing company's employees would have coverage.
So this is the only situation that you think is problematic is when client has coverage and the leasing company doesn't.
The client has, right. That's correct. I think everything else,
one of them has it, that's not a problem. Both have it, that's not a problem.
Exactly.
And if the client doesn't and the leasing company does, that's not a problem.
That's not a problem. That's exactly right. And that's covered in the second part of 91.042. After the co-employer language, it says if the license holder elects to obtain workers' compensation insurance and then so forth. That specifically addresses the situation where the staff leasing company has insurance. But
why would you need that? If under your theory, if they don't obtain it, they've, quote, elected, unquote, to rely on the workers' comp of the client. Now, why would you need D if that were true?
Well, because they could get it in their own right, and there are plenty of companies that do. In fact, the fund insures staff leasing companies and provides comp insurance for them. So they can either get it in their own right, and if they do, then I would say there's not a problem, and I think that eventuality
is you're saying if they don't
covered.
Get private insurance, they don't
right.
get comp coverage, they still elect it to fall under the policy, the client's policy. When could they ever elect not to have workers' comp?
By contracting only with employers who...
Where do we find that in the statute?
By the co-employer language. And through the policy of the courts and the legislative workforces.
Isn't this policy by the legislature to allow splitting workforces?
I don't think so, Your Honor. In fact, there's nothing that I can see that does allow that.
Would you agree that if this statute is interpreted as allowing a split workforce, mm-hmm. then your argument with regard to the application of the statute pretty much crumbles?
Well, no. I think that it's very supportive of our argument, and I think that the split workforce the approach and the prohibition against it is the broad policy reason that supports everything that we're arguing, and why, if you view this statute in that context, it makes it even more clear that co-employer means co-employer for the purposes that we mean co-employer. But I think that even if it weren't for the split workforce, I don't think that this statute relies exclusively on that. I think we turn to the language of the statute and what does co-employer mean.
Okay.
But for the split workforce, though, if the license holder, as you say, by its contract,
mm-hmm.
elects to have the client company carry workers' comp,
right.
and the client company breaches the contract and carries no comp on any employee,
right.
would you have a claim against the client company for premiums for a non-subscriber?
I guess I'm not following. You're saying if they agreed
but for the split workforce, where you have an arguable, we already have comp for this client company.
Okay.
We're already the insurance company.
Okay.
We have the right to assess premiums based on their experience.
Right.
Well, if they're not a workers' comp carrier, I mean, if they're not an employer mm-hmm. who has workers' compensation, they elect not to have it.
Right.
It seems to me you could not have this lawsuit
right.
against the client company for unpaid premiums.
Right, there's no coverage, there'd be no premiums.
But it seems part of your argument, though, about your right to assess their premiums
right.
is because the license holder has a contract with the client company that they will carry comp.
Right.
So it seems to me your entire case is premised on the split workforce. You can't get to the client company but for the fact it does have comp coverage on some of its employees.
Well, from that standpoint, that's true. That's right. That's right. If because you're going to have two separate entities, and you're going to have, in a sense, at least initially, two workforces that are combined into one, and they're either split or they're not split, and that's going to be determined by what the court ultimately holds, or what our position would be, is that if the client company has coverage, or if they both have coverage, or if the staff leasing company has coverage, then the workers are covered. Under any of those three eventualities, then the workers that work for the client, that initially work for the staff leasing company, but are part of the workforce of the client company, then those are going to be covered in all three of those instances.
But in all three of those instances, you would have a direct action for the rating, for the premiums based on the rating, because if the license holder carries it, the rating is based on the experience of the client company. If the client company has it, the rating obviously is based on the client company's. But if the client company doesn't carry comp on the assigned employees,
right.
then you have to have some mechanism to go against the client company to assess the premiums for those employees.
Well, if they don't have coverage, then you wouldn't pay premiums. I guess I'm not entirely following. Are you talking about a situation where the leasing company would have comp, but the client company would not?
No, I'm talking about where the leasing company, by contract, requires a client company to carry comp, and the client company doesn't.
Just flat doesn't do it.
And I'm trying to assess where the Texas Workers' Compensation Fund
mm-hmm.
obtains the right to assess premiums anyway.
Well, we don't obtain the right to assess premiums, but what we do know is that the Texas Workers' Compensation Commission is requiring us to cover those employees, and it is logical and right and part of doing business that if you are required to cover, to pay benefits, then you should at the same time be able to collect premiums. I think that the one other aspect that relates to the contracting between the two that's really important here is that there's something more involved in this particular case than the overall principle and the application of this rule, and that's specifically what it means to elect. Here, it's not just the statute that we're looking at, but there's also a contract between the leasing company and the client company, and in that contract, the leasing company has the client company, Dell, agree to provide workers' compensation insurance. And there's a checkoff where it checks off that it agrees to provide insurance, and then there's another part where
we'll get to that argument in here, too.
Wait, I want to...
It's not entirely clear, is it, from the contract, whether they agree to or not?
Well, it says employees. And so if there's any ambiguity, it would be what is meant by the term employees, that it will provide coverage for the employees. But if you think about it, there can't really be any reason to have it in there. Why on earth would there be in the contract a provision requiring the provision of workers' compensation coverage to the employees of the client company? Why on earth would the leasing company care? They wouldn't. The only possible way that it would be in there, the only reasonable way, would be if it means that they have elected coverage based on the requirement that the client company, Dell, pay and maintain workers' compensation.
And that's an issue that was not addressed by the Court of Appeals.
That's correct.
Was it an issue that you raised to the Court of Appeals?
Your Honor, I have to say, I think we did, but I'm not sure.
If it is...
It's hard for me to imagine that we didn't, but I don't specifically remember
that. If it was not a point of error, if it was not an issue raised in the Court of Appeals, it's an issue that we can address.
Well, I think it is in the sense that the overall issue is what is meant by an election. So I think actually, we've only really presented one primary issue, and that is the split workforce. And I think it's a sub... issue within there that is supportive of the view that there's more than one way to elect coverage. And so, yes, I think it can be considered by this court because you are determining, it seems to me, what is meant by election of coverage in the earlier part of 91.4042.
Any other questions?
So it'd be accepted to that.
Yes, if I can get it in. Do I understand your last argument that you've been discussing with Justice Abbott has to do with the theory that here, by virtue of this agreement, the Dell agreed to furnish coverage and breach that contract because they didn't. Therefore, you can charge them premiums.
I think that
would mean you have to be a third-party beneficiary of that agreement.
Well,
you can't just charge. You have to be part of that agreement to make that argument. And how can that you're a third-party beneficiary when you're not acknowledged to be such?
Well, but I'm not using it for that purpose. What I'm using it for the purpose of is to say that it's an easier way to be consistent with what the Court of Appeals said and to reconcile with 91.402, which talks about whether the license holder, the staff leasing company, elects coverage. And all I'm saying is that, yes, they have elected coverage, and the evidence of the election of that coverage is through the contract.
But if that's the answer, that the leasing company's elected coverage, then they're the ones responsible for the premiums and not Dell.
Well, but once they elect it, then by electing it, that's then necessarily, under our reading of the co-employer, you have to read it with the co-employer language, that's how they become co-employers, and that is how they elect coverage, and by being co-employers, it passes on through.
Any other questions?
Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from Ms. Farmer.
May it please the court, Mr. Hector De Leon will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. This morning I appear with Thomas Patrick Washburn as co-counsel representing Dell Industrial. This matter comes to the court on a sworn account. The fund sued Dell Industrial alleging that additional premiums were due under a workers' compensation policy of insurance that had been written by the fund covering the employees of Dell Industrial. And the argument of the fund before the trial court was that as respects those employees that were leased by Dell Industrial by Administrative Resources Limited, as respects those employees, the fund was entitled to additional premium. Now, initially the fund said we're entitled to about $82,000 in additional premium. And there were competing motions for summary judgment presented to the trial court. Judge McGowan heard those competing motions for summary judgment. Judge McGowan agreed with the fund that the sentence in paragraph C of 91.042, for workers' compensation purposes, a license holder and the license holder's client company shall be co-employers, that sentence, as a matter of law, obligated Dell Industrial to pay additional premium as respects the employees, which at least from administrative resources, as a matter of law. That was the issue before the trial court. The final judgment incorporated that summary judgment and determined that there was premium owed of $29,000, a far cry from 82. That was the issue that went up to the third court, an issue of statutory construction. What do those words mean? And it was that issue which was considered by the third court. And in considering that issue, the third court had to look at the statutory scheme that was presented. The statutory scheme is presented in 91.042. It doesn't appear in isolation, the sentence that was interpreted. The sentence appears as part of a comprehensive statutory scheme. The legislature laid out a scheme. First of all, the legislature, passing the Staff Services Leasing Act, said that we, the legislature, recognize leasing companies and the ability of those leasing companies to provide leased employees to client companies. And this is the regulatory scheme under which they may do that.
If the leased employee were an independent contractor and the client had the right to control his work, then he would be an employee for purposes of compensation?
That may be, Your Honor. I don't think that that's the issue that was before the court.
So then the legislature meant to change that.
I think the legislature definitely meant to change that, and I think the legislature set up a very specific scheme for addressing that point. They said, and the legislature was aware of these arguments about leasing companies and fraud and all the rest of it that you've heard this morning. And the legislature addressed those concerns in adopting the Staff Leasing Services Act and setting up a very comprehensive regulatory scheme as respects that issue. And in adopting that, they said, first of all, at 91.042, the first thing that the legislature said in paragraph A is that the license holder has the right to elect whether or not to purchase workers' comp policy. The license holder. Who's the license holder? It isn't Dell. The license holder is Administrative Resources Limited, the company that provided leased employees to Dell. That's what they said at paragraph 1. At paragraph B, they went on to say that if the license holder maintains workers' comp insurance, then that license holder is going to pay workers' comp premiums on the employees that it leases to a client company based upon the client company's experience for the previous 2 years. Why did the legislature say that? To address one of the concerns that the fund had, this fraud concern, this modifier cleansing issue. What the legislature was saying is client company, Dell, you can't escape your experience rating for workers' comp purposes simply by leasing employees from a staff leasing company. That's what they said. Then they went on at C to say, now, if for workers' compensation purposes, if the license holder and the client companies are working together, they're going to be working together as co-employers. But the legislature didn't stop there. The legislature went on to explain what the phrase co-employer means. And the legislature said, if the license holder elects, the license holder, Administrative Resources, not Dell, if the license holder elects to obtain workers' compensation insurance, the client company and the license holder are subject to sections 406.034.
Let me ask you this with regard to the election.
Yes, sir.
If they elect to have coverage for the leased employees, they don't file that election anyway. They just go out and make sure they have workers' comp insurance for their employees, correct?
Correct.
And one way that they can ensure that they have workers' comp insurance coverage for the employees is to put the burden on the client company to go out and buy the insurance. that certainly is within the realm of contemplation under the statute.
Your Honor, let me be real specific in responding to your question. I think if Administrative Resources intends for the employees of Dell to have workers' comp, then that issue is addressed in the contract, and it talks about the client company's employees, which was an issue which was discussed previously. If the Administrative Resources Limited, the staff leasing company, intends to make an election not to have workers' comp for its employees that it assigns to Dell, it makes that election like any other employer in Texas makes that election, by either purchasing workers' comp or not purchasing workers' comp. That's how the election is made.
Okay, but what LRL could do is to say, with regard to these leased employees, we're going to go out and get comp insurance. And they can, go to the insurance provider and pay the premiums and all that kind of stuff. Or, and if they did so, what they likely would do would be to pass on that cost to the client.
We're talking about Administrative Resources.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
That's what I call ARL, Administrative Resources.
Right.
Or what they could do to just make the whole process a little bit simpler, instead of themselves going out, getting the insurance, paying the premiums, and passing that cost along to the client, what they could do instead is just enter into a contract with the client, where the client would pick up the cost of providing for workers' compensation insurance for the leased employees.
I think either way, if Administrative Resources provided workers that are covered under a workers' comp policy, they would either pass through the cost or they would contract with them. Either way.
And if they contracted with the client, in this instance Dell, they could have some language in the contract between Dell and ARL.
Correct.
And one argument here is that language, that Dell will provide workers' compensation insurance for its employees, there's an argument that means that you contracted at least with ARL to provide workers' compensation insurance for the leased employees.
I think, Your Honor, what the contract means, where it says, and I think we need to be very careful reading the contract language. The contract language at 11.0, the contract that they entered into, says client provides Texas Workers' Compensation Act coverage for clients' employees. It doesn't just say employees, it says clients' employees. Who's the client? Dell. Dell is providing workers' comp coverage for its employees. Then it goes on to say at 11.2, company. Whose company? Administrative Resources. That they may furnish and keep in full force and effect at all times during the term of the agreement certain insurance coverages covering all company employees furnished to client pursuant to the agreement. In other words, you have two different contractual provisions. One that deals with what Dell is going to do for its employees, and one that deals with what Administrative Resources is going to do with respect to the employees that it assigns to Dell.
So, Dale, now before we get to the contract, do you agree that under the statute, that the leasing company here could contract with Dell to have Dell procure workman's comp insurance for the employees of the leasing company? Does the statute allow you to do that?
I think what the statute allows is for the employee leasing company to make the election. I think how Dell deals with that election is by either doing business with an employee leasing company that has purchased workers' comp or not doing business with companies that have purchased workers' comp. That's how they deal with it.
But that's not the answer to the question.
Well, I understand. I appreciate that. But I think that they could contract to do that. But I think that what you're suggesting is, in effect, another split workforce issue. What you're suggesting is that Dell could then contract with individual companies and say with respect, I'm sorry, Administrative Resources, my mistake, I misspoke, that Administrative Resources could go to Dell Industrial and say, Dell Industrial, we're contracting with you and we're going to provide workers' comp employees for you. So we're going to buy a policy covering those employees for you. Then we're going to go contract with DeLeon and Boggins and dealing with bargaining doesn't want employees that are covered by workers' comp policy. So administrative resources are going to say, by contract, we're not going to provide you employees covered by a policy. I think that gets you more into the split workforce situation, is where you're going with that question, in my opinion. But I think what the statute contemplates is that the employee leasing company will make an election.
Can that election be to contract with the client company so that the client company provides comp coverage for the leased employee? Does the statute allow that? I think that's the question that we're all interested in.
I think the short answer to that question is yes, under certain circumstances. And I don't mean to quibble with you, but I really think that I don't believe that the employee leasing company, the staff leasing company, has the right to, in effect, split its workforce, per se.
Between
covered and not covered.
Your point is that that provision isn't talking about a specific assigned employee. It's talking about if you're in the business of assigning employees to various companies, you could, as a license holder, elect to have compensation for all of your employees,
right.
All of these folks that you assign out.
That's right.
This is not a election by contract to an individual employee.
That's exactly my point, Your Honor.
So you could, a contract with Dell couldn't be considered an election under subpart A because that you're not electing for your assigned employees. It's just there's a group going over here to this employer that they say they're going to have comp on.
But if the leasing company is, under your theory, has to do all or nothing, it either has to provide coverage for all its employees, regardless of how many client companies various groups of employees are assigned to, or it has to be a non-subscriber. Is that right? The leasing company has to be one or the other as to all its employees. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying an employer has the right to make an election, and if that election is applied to its employees, and that means the leasing company has the right to make that election, it's going to apply to its employees.
But doesn't the statute treat the various employees of the leasing company differently in that the leasing company would pay rates for comp coverage based on information that comes from the particular client that a group of assigned employees works for? Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I appreciate your question.
The statute does not treat all the employees of the leasing company as one
That's correct.
Thing. The rates are all tied to the various client companies.
First 2 years, they are.
Right.
For the first 2 years, that is correct. If the leasing company carries workers' comp insurance, the client company can't escape its bad experience by having assigned to it those employees from a leasing company.
And, of course, that also affects the leasing company because it affects what they pay for the coverage
sure.
that they buy. So one group of the leasing company's employees may be costing the leasing company more for comp coverage than another group, depending on the history during those first 2 years of the respective client company.
Correct. And those are costs that certainly are going to be passed on by contract. I think it's a business practice. That's what's going to happen.
You agree that if the leasing company does not cover its employees, then the client is subject to suit. Under the common law.
Sure. I mean, that's exactly what you go down to see, look at the second sentence of C, look at paragraph D, and what does it tell you? It tells you what the effect of the election is. It gives the employee leasing company the right to make the election. Then it says, and Dell Industrial, client company, whoever you are, if you do business with a staff leasing company that doesn't carry comp, here's what happens. Here's the effect of it.
You couldn't avail yourself of the common law doctrine that if you control the employee, they would be an employer for coverage purposes.
That's right. I mean, what it says is you're either the victim or the beneficiary of the election, is what it says. You can't have it both ways. I think what the legislature did is it said one entity has the right to make the election, and both entities live or die by that election. It sure didn't say that the fund has got the right to come along and say, and by the way, Dale, because you happen to carry a policy covering your employees, we've got the right to assess your premium for the administrative resource limited employees. It sure didn't say that.
So they're treated as a non-subscriber as the least employee.
As respects those least employees, that's exactly right.
And they're treated as a co-employer, non-subscriber.
They're just a co-employer, non-subscriber as respects those particular employees. And I think the argument of the fund that you've heard about split workforce as respects them simply chooses to ignore the statutory scheme. It's, you know, what you're being asked by the fund is to ignore that the legislature set up a Staff Leasing Services Act mechanism.
The Staff Leasing Services Act has certain requirements that are must be in the contract between the client company and the license holder.
Correct.
But there certainly are other terms that are subject to negotiation.
Correct.
And what you're saying then is that whether a license holder or a leasing company in their negotiations with the client company really can't negotiate anything about the comp coverage because they're bound by an election made for all their assigned workers.
Precisely.
So that can't be a point of negotiation where someone could go in with a leasing company, could go with a particular company and negotiate and say, well, let's figure out what we're going to do with these employees and we'll figure it into what the economic ramifications of our agreement are, and that's not an option available under these circumstances.
No.
And so client companies have to decide, do I want to deal with a leasing company that is a subscriber or is not, and that's the end of that discussion.
That's exactly right. That's the A to Z of it.
Assume a couple of things and then answer a question.
Okay.
Assume that the leasing agency makes an independent determination with regard to whether or not it obtains workers' compensation insurance made independently with regard to each client that it deals with. Okay? So it splits its workforce the way you say that the statute should not.
Okay.
Understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. And assume that the way that the leasing agency made the election about whether or not to obtain workers' compensation insurance was done by way of contract between the leasing agency and the client company, such that the leasing agency required the client company to go ahead and obtain the workers' compensation insurance.
Okay.
It's the contract issue we have in this case. My question with regard to this case, assuming those two predicates, can the fund still pursue the client company, you, in this case, for payment of premiums because you contracted with the leasing agency to provide workers' compensation insurance? Or are they going to have to pursue the leasing agency for those premiums? Or is there just a breach of contract issue between you and the leasing agency? How does the whole contract issue play out between the client company and the leasing agency?
You're asking me to presume that on an individual basis, they can negotiate this with the
right.
Let's forget about what I'm the police. If you're going to tell me what the truth about it is anyway, so let's presume that that's the case. And the client company contracts with the leasing company and says, you've got to have comp.
Right.
And in effect, they contract with the leasing company and force the leasing company to make the election to have comp. Does the fund then have the right to pursue Dell for contracting with administrative resources to maintain comp?
Right.
No.
Why?
Why? Because the contract, as respects workers' comp insurance, the purchase of the comp, no matter whether they contracted for it or not, if administrative resources purchase the comp policy from the fund, then they're the ones who are obligated to pay the premium.
What if it's the other way around, though?
Well, I think that's exactly what's here before the court. If it's the other way around, you get to the same place.
Is the fund obligated to provide coverage?
To who?
The
fund is obligated to provide coverage to the employees for which it collected premium, period.
So there's an obligation to the premium is collected?
That's right. And, you know, I heard at the third court level an interesting concept, the notion that premium follows liability. I've been doing this for about 25 years, and I've never heard an insurance company argue that premium follows liability. Liability follows premium. It's called consideration. If you don't have consideration, you don't have a contract. You don't have a reason to be liable. Any other questions?
One more question. Mr. DeLeon, was issue joined in the trial court on the interpretation of the contract between Dell and the leasing company in terms of what the language on the election was meant? Was that issue joined in the trial court? Has it been litigated there?
I don't recall, Your Honor. I don't recall that it was or it wasn't. We'd ask you to affirm the judgment of the third court. Thank you.
Before you get started, the only copy of the contract I have is at tab M. Is there a better copy anywhere in the record?
Judge, I'm not sure. We'll let you know.
We'll provide a better copy of it. If that one's difficult to read, in any event, we will provide a better copy of it.
Do you know whether the issue was joined on the contract language?
It wasn't, but I think that the problem that the court's having is in understanding that there are two contracts involved here. We're not trying to enforce the contract between Dell and Limited. What happened was is that Dell came to us to get insurance coverage. We contracted with each other then that we would provide them insurance coverage for their employees. Then, under the language of the Staff Leasing Services Act, they are co-employers of the lease workers. Therefore, we believe that under our contract that they are liable to pay the premium for those leased workers. And so that's where our rights come from. It's not an attempt to enforce this other contract.
And you're just saying that shows that that's what the parties into that transaction thought was going to happen too.
Exactly right. Exactly. And the other contract just kind of shores up our argument, shores up our position that in fact the leasing company elected to have coverage because that's what the evidence shows in the two of them. But I think it's just important.
I have one question. That is that with regard to these leased employees, you say that Dell did not pay premiums for those leased employees.
That's correct.
It turned out that none of those leased employees were injured.
Right? As far as I know.
Have one of those leased employees been injured and sought recovery, would you have paid in light of the fact that they had not paid their premium?
Well, that determination would have been made. If there was a dispute, it would have been made by the Texas Workers' Compensation Commission, and they are saying, yes, we would have had to pay it. So the answer is yes, based on how the commission is
subject to appeal of that decision.
Would your position have been that you were not obligated to pay?
I don't know the answer to that. It seems to me that even if that were our position, we've got an uphill battle based on the fact that the commission who makes most of the determination in our cases has determined that we would be liable. Whether we would have ultimately, how far we would have gone with that, I really can't say that, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the R.F. Briefs, and that concludes the oral arguments for today, and all three copies are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. Marshall will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.